1 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbite. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we will be taking your calls at the numbers you just heard. So give us a call right now, 222-1180 in the 585 area code, 295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free 800 line. And if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's star 1180. But before we get to those calls, we are going to check the news, and we will start, I think, this week with the hardware news.
All right. This is long overdue. TDK is finally announced that they're going to create a two-gigabyte CDRW. It's due out the second quarter of this year. That's pricing on the drive is going to be about $199, and the media will go anywhere from $1.99 to $2.99. But like if anything else, if this really catches on, which I have no doubt that it won't, I mean, people have been always complaining, you know, I got to be able to get more stuff on there. These 650 meg and 700 meg discs just aren't holding what everything I want with the bigger hard drive. So this is going to be a great solution.
Well, remember when the CDRWs first came out, they were $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, and even the media. I mean, right now,
right.
Just like anything else, it's new. It'll be new. It'll be high price. But then once they get cranking it out, it'll drop like the rest of the stuff right now because the average media right now you can get for a couple bucks.
Steve, what's going on in the world of Apple?
Well, we actually had the product announcements, the Jobs keynote for Macworld on Monday, and they announced one of the biggest rumors were the flat-screen iMac, but they went beyond just a flat-screen iMac and actually designed this really cool thing on a little aluminum pole.
They didn't design anything. If you take the Pixar logo,
which is what everyone started calling it, the iLamp.
Yes, exactly. There you go.
But it's this really sweet. The 15-inch LCD screen kind of floats in midair. It's got this really curvy half a basketball, basically, base underneath it. What the really cool thing is, comes with a G4 processor up to 800 megahertz with a DVD-R drive, which can store 4 gigabytes of data, and for $1,799. So they basically dropped the cost of a G4 by $1,000, which now the rumors are starting about what's going to happen in the professional line, because we can't have our professional G4s being slower and more expensive than our home user G4s.
It's a very exciting announcement and a really neat-looking product. For those of you who are running Internet Explorer, and that has to do with our poll that we'll talk about later in the show, Microsoft Corporation said it's investigating an alleged flaw in recent versions of its Internet Explorer browser software that could allow attackers to spoof legitimate websites, steal content from browser cookies, and gain access to certain types of files on a victim system. The flaw, which affects IE versions 5.5 to 6, which doesn't make it all that recent, was first reported to the company December 19th. The vulnerability is the result of Microsoft's failure to abide by an industry standard browser security rule known as the same origin policy. Basically, if one website opens a window into another website, if those two sites are on different servers, if they have different origins,
yep,
then the second window is not allowed to look at the cookies or any of the files.
They're not supposed to.
Well, Microsoft ignored that and just simply left that out. Microsoft, of course, is upset that anybody made this information public. They've only had about a month to fix it and haven't done so yet, so they're a little upset that people have opened that up. So if you are
using, they must use that technology in some of their own websites.
No, they wouldn't do that.
That's not true.
No.
But those of you who are using Internet Explorer may want to think twice about that, and then we'll talk about that a little later in the poll. Right now, we're going to get to the phones, and our first caller is Tony from Greece. Welcome, Tony. What's your question?
Help.
That's not a question. That's an exclamatory sentence.
And we will see you next week.
What can we do for
you? What's your problem?
I loaded a game on my Windows 95 computer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's an Aptiva 300, 64 megabyte with an 8 gig hard drive.
Okay.
I'm locked in MS-DOS. It won't let me go back into Windows other than the safe mode.
Have you? You're at it like a DOS window.
Yes.
Have you typed exit? EXIT.
Yes, and it brings me right back there.
Sounds like.
What it sounds like it did is it changed his auto exec.
And what kind of a game was it? Was it a DOS game or a Windows game?
Well, it actually was an older one. I believe it was. I had to go into DOS to load it.
So yeah. What it probably did is adjust your AutoExec files to make itself run
the game, yeah.
Which then
in
is not preventing mode. The rest of Windows from working right. It's a problem with games especially.
What you might want to do is look for a file is adjusted. Through
if
a
you're
game,
lucky.
Yeah. But most of those old games used to make a backup of your AutoExec and config file. What you want to do is at the DOS prompt, look for an older version. It would probably have either if you did it today's or yesterday's, whenever you changed it or added the program, a backup of the AutoExec and config file.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to do is rename the current AutoExec and config. And then rename those backups to autoexec.bat and config.sys. And then you should be back to the point where you were before you installed this game.
Okay, say that second part again. Rename the backup?
Yeah, the backup. What you want to do with that, if it's autoexec.bak, you want to rename it to autoexec.bat. And if the config file is, say, config.syd, you want to rename it to config.sys.
Okay, .sys,
yep.
Config sys.
Yeah, if they've been changed.
Okay.
All righty.
We'll try it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks. We're going to go to a cell phone next. We have Keith from Rochester on the cell. Keith, what's your question?
Hello. Yeah, I wanted to know,
you're pulled over, aren't you, Keith?
Yes, I'm pulled over.
All right, good.
Don't need any tickets.
Right.
When I do searches at Yahoo, MSN, any of the search things, when you double-click on the search window, you get a list of searches that you've had, right?
Right.
Is there any way to delete that?
Generally, what is your browser?
Explorer.
If you go into the tools menu.
Internet options.
And then go to Internet options.
Yeah.
You can clear the history, which...
That doesn't take it away.
Okay, you're not in the history, you're in the search thing.
Yeah. In other words, that'll clear your browser history. But I'm talking, it's weird because you go to different search engines and they'll have different lists.
Right.
That's probably a cookie, what searches you've done in the past.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about each individual search engine.
Right. I mean, some search engines, they'll have the same list.
Right.
But I found, if I go through and erase everything, all my cookies, everything,
right.
Those do not go away. And I even went to Microsoft, and they came with a couple of things to do, and that didn't take it away either.
Yeah, if they're being stored at the search engine site, then there is nothing you can do about it.
Okay, that's what I wondered, if that's possible. And then they must look at your IPS or whatever.
Yeah, whatever that's all about. Yeah, particularly if it's someplace you have to log into to search.
Yeah, okay. All right, I just wondered if there was any easy fix for that or if you think there's nothing you could do.
Nope, sorry.
Okay, hey, thanks for trying, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Our next caller is
Roger
from Rochester. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
A couple things. One is an annoyance. Running Windows 98 and Outlook Express, and it won't save my password. I have to type it in each time.
What version of 98?
I think it's 0.2.
Second edition.
Yeah.
Have you done the updates?
No.
And what version of Internet Explorer are you running?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I think it's probably the same thing.
Well,
if it's 5,
then you need definitely go to...
Yeah, what you got to do is start up Internet Explorer, you go over to the Help and About, and it'll tell you what version. And you want to be up to at least 5.5 there.
So 5.5 on both of them. But
oh, well, 5.5 on Internet Explorer, Windows 98, second edition, you're all set there. But you also want to look at the critical updates.
Okay, because it was working, I think, and it whatever happened, it just won't. I have to type in my password.
Yes, but the update should fix that.
Yep. Okay, can I ask one other thing?
Very fast.
I've got a Palm, and when I double click on the Palm icon on my screen, I get a message that says exprept.exec model is cannot be found.
Exprept
dot
Oh, that's the expense report.
Yeah.
What you want to do is go to the hot link button.
Yeah.
Click on it. You'll see a menu. Select custom, I think.
Yep.
And then you'll see a bunch of choices, one of which is expense report. Change that to say do nothing.
Do nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Bye.
We're going to take a quick break now, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Craig Shaler is on the board today, and I'm Nick Francesco for Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Don't try this at home. You don't
we're
have
expert.
The microphone.
We're paid professionals.
We're Soundbites. Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Gary from Greece is on the line. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
My sister's got a problem with her computer.
Oh, here we go.
No, really.
Yeah, uh-huh. I got some swampland for you, too. Really, really.
No, a friend of a friend has a friend who's got a computer.
Well, her first...
And I'm just trying to help him out.
No, my computer's working fine. She lives in Albany, and her first mistake was thinking that I could fix this problem.
Oh, yeah.
But I said,
Well, you can. You send her your computer, and she'll send you,
there you
hers,
go.
And
yeah.
Then it'll become your problem.
I said, but I know who can fix it.
Yeah, it's just soft soapas.
Well, she's got a... A PC, it's a Pentium 200 MMX. She's running Windows 95B,
mm-hmm.
and she has AOL. Almost nothing loaded on it.
Okay.
And it was running fine, and then she went to boot it up one day, mm-hmm. and the message came up and said, warning, Windows did not finish loading on the previous attempt. Choose safe mode.
Uh-oh.
So she went to safe mode, and then got a message that said, VFAT, device initialization failed.
Mm-hmm.
A device or resource required by VFAT is not present or is unavailable.
Okay.
VFAT cannot continue loading. System halted. And
what you might want to do is try reloading Windows 95 over Windows 95.
Mm.
Well, before that, I might suggest doing a scan disk at the DOS prompt.
Okay.
Something happened that makes some of the Windows files corrupt.
But that registry is messed.
Yeah, the registry is messed. Windows will never work again. You have to reinstall Windows and hope it reloads whatever was corrupted.
Yeah. It's a real problem, particularly with a machine that old. It could also be that the hard drive is failing.
Yeah, something made that file go corrupt.
You might want to first check to see if there's a lot of check files. CHK files, they end in CHK.
Mm-hmm.
If she's got a lot of them on there, that's usually an indication that the hard drive is getting a little tired and is getting ready to go on her.
Does she smoke?
No.
But it could be.
And she has dogs.
Pet hair. Yeah, pet hair and smoking can cause
excessive
heat. Yeah,
but that doesn't get into the heart. Yeah, that can cause the excessive heat. But if the hard drive is getting ready to go, it's just an early warning sign. Have her check for the check files. If not, try reloading Windows 95 over 95.
Okay.
But it's not going to be a promise because a machine that old, it could well be the hard drive.
Yeah. If she tries to reload 95 over what's there,
mm-hmm.
I haven't checked the Microsoft website lately. Do
it
they
won't do
still have the
good.
Service packs out there?
No, it won't do you any good. They dropped the support for Windows 95 as of
December 31st.
October with the XP rolling out.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So she's pretty well stuck with it, but she cannot get the service packs back unless she saved them on her hard drive. Because reloading 95 over itself, if she does set up and doesn't reformat the hard drive, just loads a new copy of Windows 95. Everything else will be there, and if she still has the old service packs on her drive,
she might luck out if she goes searching on Google or one of those.
Some of the older file sites might have kept.
Yeah, they might still have some of them. She might luck out there, but
sure
no guarantee.
No promise.
Okay, and you also mentioned maybe she should try scan disk.
Yeah.
Especially in thorough mode to make sure it checks the entire hard drive. Because if it is the hard drive failing, that'll tell you the first first step to finding that.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Well, tell her to try that, and I'll try and talk her through it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Our next caller is Jay from Geneseo, also on a cell phone. Oh, boy, are you. Jay.
How you doing, guys? I like the program. I just got a quick question for you regarding Windows ME as opposed to Windows NT. And I'm a basic home user. I am on a network home with two other computers, and I'm looking to actually... put up another operating system on my computer, and I'm wondering if I should go with ME, or I do have a new version of NT. I'm trying to figure out which one.
All right, Craig, first cut Dave's microphone off. Basically, I'm going to say this. Just keep quiet. We don't have that much time.
Wait a minute. I'm going over to Steve.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Dump them all and buy a Mac.
No, go 98 Second Edition.
If you can still get a copy of 98 Second Edition, that's best. Windows ME is not ready for prime time.
It never was.
Never be. XP Home is okay, but I would stay away from ME if I were you
anybody. What processor speed do you have?
I think Jay is gone. You definitely want to take a look at the box and see what the minimum requirements are. Of course, you should always double the minimum requirements. But I wouldn't go to ME. NT is fine. XP is fine. 98 Second Edition is fine.
NT loads its whole other level of complexity with system administration.
Yeah, you get your own
system administrator. That's why XP Home would be a better choice for that.
XP or 98. Well, XP, if he's got the requirements or the capabilities for, because you got to have at least a 600 megahertz.
Right, exactly.
So definitely 98 Second Edition would be a better bet.
Yep. Our next caller is Bert from Palmyra. Welcome, Bert. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Peachy, how are you?
Have you folks run into anything that were a bug or worm or
feature,
virus or whatever online that messes around with the Windows critical update notification stuff?
Haven't seen it yet, but we're all expecting it.
Yeah.
It's out, I guess. Picked up an odd email yesterday. Norton didn't flag anything about it, so I just deleted it. But it's reset everything in my, you know, in the task scheduler, the Windows critical update thing.
Yeah.
It set it to, at 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon, start checking Windows critical updates every 5 minutes, 7 days a week, 24 hours
what
a day.
What version? Cool. You using McAfee or Norton?
Norton.
You might want to go up to their site over the weekend and see if they come out with any patches.
Yeah.
There was an issue several months ago that somebody somehow spoofed a security certificate in Microsoft's name so that they could issue an update claiming to be secure from Microsoft.
In fact, VeriSign gave two kids Microsoft secure certificates because they called up and said, "We're from Microsoft, send us some certificates." And VeriSign did.
Get out.
But, I'm not that shocked about that, Bert.
You have to stop. Well, you never should have, but now you have to stop always trusting content from Microsoft.
Well, anybody who checked that deserves what they get anyway, but still.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bert. Right. I appreciate that. Our next caller on Soundbites, Jeff from Webster. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
I just have an answer to the caller who had a problem with the drop-down menu of searches.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's talking about Internet Explorer's autocomplete feature.
Okay.
And in order to clear those, you can just, when it drops down, don't click on it, just put it over it, and, click once and press the delete key.
Mm-hmm.
That'll clear out that one entry.
Right, and then you'd have to do it for every entry.
Right. But
that's a good thought, Jeff. Thanks.
Okay, you're welcome.
Appreciate it. That's what I love when callers come in, call up and answer other people's questions. Eventually, we'll be sitting here, line 3, talk to line 7. Line 2, talk to line 5. And we're going to talk to Eloise from Rochester. Welcome, Eloise. What's your question?
Well, I have picked up two viruses, which Norton's has detected.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And one is Windows DLDERXE.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Windows Explorer XE.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both a W32DLDER.Trojan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How do I get rid of them?
Just have them clean it and delete. Or delete
they won't
them.
Delete because they're both XE files. I've tried to delete.
Well, the problem you have is that they're being actually used by Windows. So you can't. Well, here, you got two problems, Eloise.
Norton should be able to quarantine them away from
Windows.
Well,
but the problem is Explorer is the graphical user interface, and the DLL file is used by everything.
Well,
so if she deletes them, she's fairly well doomed. Right.
But if she goes in, if she reboots and goes into safe mode,
right,
and that's why the most simplistic drivers and all this other stuff isn't loaded, that she could then quarantine them or maybe even clean or delete them out of...
Well, with
GUI will still be running. It's explorer.exe. You have to do it from DOS.
Yeah, but it's the most simplest GUI is what I'm saying for the first try.
Norton might be able to clean it in that instance.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. The thing to do is to try rebooting in safe mode. What version of Windows are you running?
95.
Then what you want to do is, as it starts, hit F8 a number of times until you see a menu. One of the choices is safe mode.
Okay.
I personally don't think that's going to work, but
give it
a
shot.
98.
I'm sorry, 98. Windows 98.
Same idea.
Yeah.
Hit that F8 key.
Okay.
And then go into safe mode and run a thorough scan of your virus and see if that fixes it.
Does Norton have a utility that you can run out of DOS?
If you bought the commercial version, you get the
boot
bullet disk.
Yeah,
the boot disk.
Yeah.
Well, we got the whole thing.
Then you should have a boot disk that lets you boot the system and clean it up.
Okay.
The problem is going to be that what you're deleting is the thing that loads all the DLLs and the thing that runs the GUI.
And she's also got to have, though, the most current DAT files, because even if she's got that magic bullet and it doesn't have the current DAT files...
So you actually don't want to delete those files. You want to have Norton clean them of the virus.
Right.
Okay.
And that you'll probably have to do from DOS because they're Windows executable programs.
Or rename.
Would Clean Sleep clean those up?
No.
They're viruses.
Eloise, your safest bet at this point might be to take the machine to a professional, because those two files are absolutely required to run Windows.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break now, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave, Steve, Craig, me, Nick. All on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Soundbites with Nick Francesco. Whether it's a computer problem or computer-related problem, these guys can help. Call the boys now at 222-1180, the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco.
Where?
I think he's there.
Oh, I'm here.
You're there.
You're there. Excellent. We're all here. Nick, Dave, Steve, Craig's on the buttons, and we have Keith from Victor on the line. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
Nick, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm probably the only person on the face of the earth that actually bought ME, and my question is...
Stop it. No.
Always...
Step away from the microphone.
Well,
go ahead. Not you, Keith. Dave.
I've been decootified, so.
There's hope for you yet.
I got a couple questions and a couple comments. If I downloaded Opera or an Internet Explorer, will that work with ME?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Opera is a great piece of software.
Works with everything.
Browser. It works with everything.
Yeah.
There's a version for every operating system on Earth, including the defunct ones, like B.
Yeah.
All right.
The one thing, I went to the site, and where I downloaded from was RG&E, which I thought was kind of odd. That was the link where I go to get it.
Okay. That's fine. Everybody's mirroring Browse.
Okay. I also liked your little column in the newspaper about advice, what to do, because I did upgrade the ME operating system, and it seems to be running a little bit better. And now what I do, whenever I have 24 hours of complete satisfaction, what did I create that as a...
How often is that?
Well, I create it now as a restore point.
Those moments must be far and few between.
Yeah,
and that's the one feature Dave actually likes.
Yeah, right.
Well, when it does something spectacular, that's where I wait 24 hours and then to save it.
There you go. Nicely done.
The other question, the last question is, I had a monitor and it bit the dust, okay? So I took the older monitor that I had down in the basement, dusted it off, plugged it in, and lo and behold, it looked like snow. It didn't work right. So I turned off the computer, turned it back on, pressed setup, F2, and it gave me, the screen was workable, and it gave me some video options. I tried to do them, but I could never get it on the older monitor. Did they have something to do with the video card in the newer computer versus the older?
It's the synchronization and timing signals of the monitor. Some of the very old monitors were limited to like 640 by 480 at 60 hertz, which is perfect for the DOS mode the computer starts in. But when Windows starts, it might go to even 640 by 480 at 67 hertz, and then the monitor won't work anymore.
The simple reality is the old monitor is nice for a doorstop and that's it.
Yeah, you might, you know, just go buy a brand new one.
If you boot Windows into safe mode, that may work because that drops it down to the very lowest denominator.
Right.
And then the easiest thing to do would be to go through the internet, find the specs on that monitor and what its resolution and frequency is.
I just bought a new monitor. I didn't want to screw around.
Yeah. And the reality is that old monitor is never going to look as good as the new one anyway.
Yeah.
The question with Opera for Internet Explorer, will that give me less pop-up screens? Or
you can, there are settings in Opera to ignore all pop-ups.
Oh, all right. Because sometimes you're waiting for a page to load, then all of a sudden it's like the page is, you know, checked out. And all this other superfluous crapola is coming up.
And the pop-unders are getting common now, too.
You can't
say you get the pop-under, and the page stops loading until the other thing. And then you see it down on the toolbar.
Yeah, and you can. There is a setting in Opera to suppress or ignore all pop-ups.
All right, so I'll take your advice, try Opera, and create a restore point before I go there.
There you go.
Sacrifice a chicken.
Yeah. There you are. Thanks. I think we got time for another caller before the break. It's Alan from Rochester. Welcome, Alan. What's your question?
Thanks, Nick, Dave, and Steve. I inherited a hand-me-down computer from my brother that I'm trying to set up for my kids to play their CD-ROM games on.
What type of machine is it?
It's an old Pac Bell. It's Windows 95. It's only got an 850 megabyte hard drive.
Yeah.
But my problem seems to be on boot up, I get a screen that says, "The interface board or CD-ROM drive is not ready. Ensure the drive power is on, the cable's correctly attached, abort or retry."
Mm-hmm.
I can boot Windows by aborting, but then the system does not recognize a CD-ROM drive at all. I open it up, and all the cables seem to be attached.
But what, it's a 95 machine?
It's a 95.
All right, what you're going to probably have to do is double-check the AutoExec and config file, because within 95, it needed the drivers loaded in both the config and AutoExec.
Yeah, I looked for that and tried to set up the new driver, and it's asking me for a particular file, mtmminip.mpd.
Right.
But I do not have a Windows 95 system disk.
It's not from Windows.
No, it's not from Windows. It's from the CD manufacturer.
It is.
Yeah, you've got to download the files for that. It's a sys file.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went to a driver site on the internet with my other computer, and I downloaded it to a floppy, and I tried to get it from the floppy into this system, and it tells me the information is not on the disk, even though I do have that file both as a DOS file and a zip file and a ZipEXE selfie extracting file.
You probably specifically need the INF file, because that's what, when you're loading a driver, the INF is the information file that tells Windows what drivers are on the disk, and then it loads the driver by using the INF. So you don't need just the file it's looking for. You need also the driver installation
and
setup.
And this file has to be in the location where in the config file it's looking for it. So if it's looking for it in, say, a folder called CD-ROM or whatever it's called, or if it's out on the root directory, that this file has to be in that location, or it can't find it and load it.
Well, let me ask a flanking question here. What if I put a new CD-ROM drive in the machine? Would that help me at all?
When you buy a new CD drive, you'll get a driver disk with it. Right. So
that might be an easier way to remedy the thing.
Did the machine come with a restore disk? Because Pac Bell was pretty common on that.
I asked my brother if he had any of the disks, and he said no. And I had an old Windows 95 system that I had the system backed up on the floppies, and I tried all 27 floppies.
Bell. Every computer needs specific drivers for its own resources, but a lot of the consumer machines like Packard Bell would have a restore disk.
Right,
and you might also find
that you can't put a different CD in
it. Yeah, you can't. With Packard Bell, they've got to have their specific CD-ROM drive for their CD.
Your best bet at this point, Alan, is to call Packard Bell or get on their website and give them the serial number off the back of the machine and see if they can give you the driver you need.
Or the whole restore CD.
Okay, terrific. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
And just watch the games you're going to load on that, because specs are a lot higher now for some of the newer games, and that machine won't handle them.
We're going to go, but we'll be back in a little while. If you're on the line, please hang on. If you're not on the line,
Get on the line.
Give us a call. We'll be back in just 10 minutes. Dave, Steve, Nick, Craig, me, Nick Francesco, and all of us on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice One toll free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
And yes, we are back. Welcome back. One more hour of Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco. We have Dave Enright. We have Steve Ray. We have Bill Shaler on the buttons, and John from Craig. Who's Phil? Phil's some caller.
I don't know.
Later. We have Craig Shaler on the buttons, and John from Henrietta.
Bill Shaler is the Vice President of Marketing for Apple Computer.
Okay, good for him. We have John from Henrietta on the line. Welcome, John. What's Henrietta? What's
your question? Yeah, how are you doing today, guys?
Good, how are you?
Got probably a simple question for you, and I don't know if you'd be able to do it on the computer, but what I wanted to find out is, I got
depends on whether it's kinky or not.
Mm-hmm. Stop
no,
it.
I got a CDRW.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if there was a way that you could take your audio tapes and put them onto your CDRs.
Sure. It depends.
How do you do that?
It depends on what audio capabilities your computer has. If you have a mic input or a line input on your computer already, then you just take a patch cord from your tape player to the microphone port. And
you put it in where the mic goes?
Well, it depends if your tape player is doing a line out or a mic out.
Okay.
And then you match that on your sound card into the line in or into the mic in. And then most of the sound cards have come with some sort of recording software anyway, or even the Microsoft standard
sound recorder.
Right. And then you have an audio file that you can put on your CD drive. If you want a little better editing quality, there are commercial freeware and shareware and commercial programs that you can download. Cakewalk is a big one. Who's the other one? Pro Tools from DigiDesign. They have a free version that you can download.
You might want to first record it.
Now we'll put up the links.
Yeah.
First record it and save it to your hard drive, and then do any editing and all that you want to do. And then
what do you mean?
You save it as a file, and then from there you move that file over to the CDRW.
Okay, do you save it through, like, Windows Media Player or something
Whatever program you use to record the file with. If Sound Recorder probably gives you a WAV.
Okay.
And then, depending on how you want to listen to it, if you want to listen to it in an audio CD player, you have to convert it to an AIFF, and most of the CD burning programs will do that for you.
There is a free one called Nero, and it's on our website, www.soundbites.org. And you can get to that by going to wham1180.com. Go down to the lower left, click on the Soundbites logo. You'll come to a little page about us. Click on the link to our website. Down on the lower right on our website is a link that says, I heard about a website on your show. And you can then see our stuff. And there's two lists. The one on the right is alphabetical, and it's called Nero, as in burning Nero.
If you have CD Creator from Roxio, that it comes with a program called Spin Doctor, which is designed to do LPs.
Yep.
But you can also do cassettes or even 8-tracks. Basically, whatever audio feed you can pull into your sound card.
Where do you get that program at? Electronics Boutique or something like that?
Well, Easy CD Creator comes with CD Writer drives.
What?
Nero comes with CD Writer drives. It depends on what drive you got and what software
it
came
with. Yeah, you should have gotten software with it, so just take a look at what you've already got on your machine.
You might just have to update that software. If you've got, like, Easy Creator, you might have gotten the very older version, and where you go and purchase the upgrade for it, and a lot of those features are now in the newer version.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
Yep, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. We want to talk about the poll, but I think we ought to take this cell phone call first. Phil, on the cell phone.
Yes, I'm here.
You're pulled over, right?
Actually, I'm riding.
All right. Okay. Hands-free, though, right?
Hands-free.
Now, there's a loophole in the law. There's no phones while you're driving, or no phones while you're in the car?
No, it's no phones while you're driving, and I'm not driving.
What's your question?
My question is, I purchased a compact Presario 1200. I think 1200T about 16 months ago, and it died.
Okay.
I've gone and tested the power supply. I've even brought it into a local advertiser in this station and had them look at it, and they can't figure out what's going on. I'm just curious if there's other people who had the same problems with compact Presarios or not, because I didn't buy the extended warranty, unfortunately.
And it's a power supply?
Not the power supply. They couldn't find a problem.
It won't turn on, or it turns on and won't work?
It will not turn on.
If it's and they tested out the power supply?
Yeah, tested out the power supply. They even swapped the chip.
The Nintendo One adds it's a motherboard.
And it's the motherboard.
Yeah, if they've tested all the other components on it, in other words, you know, they popped everything out, and you take it down to the most simplistic, which is just basically a video card, the memory, and the CPU. Nothing else.
Minimum memory.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, one stick.
And it doesn't boot, and you know the power supply is good, then it's the motherboard.
And it's the motherboard.
Yep. But don't they come with a one-year warranty?
Yeah, it's a 1 year, but it's, you know, like 2 months past it.
Yeah, but
you might
be able to call them and say, look, you know, it just, you know, a month out of warranty, it's not working
right.
Yeah, but
I thought Compact, though, had like a 2 and a 3 year warranty.
No, you had to buy
different.
It.
But also, it's also the home model and the business models have different.
I would still give them a call and see what they have to say.
Yeah.
It can't hurt.
Yeah. You're so close to the edge.
Okay, we'll do.
All right.
Thanks for your advice.
Good luck. Thanks.
Bye.
We're going to get back to the phones shortly, but first I think we're going to talk a little bit about the poll. Every week we have a poll on our website. Last week's poll was, how many times does your virus detector catch a virus? We had 215 of you vote, which I really like.
Yeah.
I love to see the more of you, the better. The winner was a few times a month with 93 votes. Next was 83 votes for never, which probably means you just never look at the logs that show whether
they caught it or not.
18 of you said, I don't run a virus detector. My assumption is that you're all running Linux. Once or twice a week.
No, either that or those machines have been into my shop lately.
Yeah, right. Or more than five times a week, only got 6 votes. I'd like to thank all 215 of you who voted on our website. It's the soundbites.org website. Get to it through the 1180 WHAM. WHAM 1180 website. This week's poll is about web browsers. We already talked in the beginning about yet another hole in Internet Explorer, so we're asking you which web browser you use. There are lots of choices up here, and 61 of you have voted so far. So far, shockingly, the winner is Internet Explorer, followed by Netscape Navigator, followed by Opera, followed by AOL, followed by something else, followed by Conqueror, Galleon, and Mozilla, which are all Linux. Based, actually, Mozilla runs on everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And nobody's voted for Lynx, the text-based web browser.
It's interesting to look through the past history, because we've had this poll two or three times in our 13-year history.
13 years.
And it's interesting to see how the trends have changed, but also interesting how many more browsers are available now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There was a time in which the choices were Internet Explorer, Netscape Navigator, and Lynx. But please vote in the poll, www.soundbites.org.
And it still scares me to see Internet Explorer so popular.
Well, you know, that's
the default.
Well, that's the default.
Right.
A
lot of people don't realize you can use something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be get back to the phones in just a couple of minutes. So those of you who are online, please hold on. We will get back to you very, very shortly on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Where? Oh,
yeah.
I'm right here.
Your boy.
I am Nick Francesco. We have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Craig Shaler on the buttons. And our first caller is very, very close in Rochester, New York, is Jeff.
Hello.
Welcome, Jeff.
Hello. How are you guys?
We have a computer question over here.
Yeah. No, this is Jeff Holland, and I want to formally welcome you to WHAM, guys.
Thank you so
appreciate
much.
Appreciate it.
Now, Nick and I began, we should not go down that road.
Nick and I began. I'm just not getting any more free lunches is the problem.
Many years ago, Nick and I started to talk about this, and it finally came to fruition. And I'm hearing so many good comments about you guys on WHAM.
God bless
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it.
I am delighted.
We're glad to be here.
Thank you.
Now, poor Nick, and Dave, too. Every time I call them, I always begin, hey, Dave, how are you? Good. Show's sounding great. Good.
I've got a computer question.
So my computer question today is, and I think this is common. I've heard other people mention this. Why does the clock on my computer get screwed up once in a while? Quite frequently.
If it happens frequently, then you're probably it's the battery in your system.
Really?
Can be that. Or I've also noticed a lot of programs like Zone Alarm and a few of the others can more or less get hung up, and they more or less freeze the clock, and they lose time.
Yeah.
But if you reboot the machine, it comes back and it's fine.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, then it's not the battery.
No.
Really?
One thing you can do is that there are a couple of free programs. One is About Time.
Ooh, I like that. Free.
Free
yeah,
is good. About Time is one of those programs that goes out to the web and goes to one of the national time things from the NIST, National Institute of Standards and Time.
Okay.
And gets the real national time down to the atomic clock,
mm-hmm,
milli-instant, and then set your system clock to that.
Yeah. Okay.
So you never know when your battery's dying.
Yeah, right.
And if the battery is dead, where is the battery in the computer?
It's on the motherboard.
Yeah, it's a little wafer battery.
I mean, can you put in your clock in your watch?
You have to take the whole thing apart to get to the battery, or can you just tip it upside down?
No, you bring it to one of these guys, and they take it apart.
Yeah, I can change it out.
They always build them that way, don't they?
Sometimes they hide them under other components, but sometimes you can get to the battery just by taking the cover off.
So instead of changing a battery, it's going to cost me $5. It's going to cost me $150, right?
Right, exactly.
Those we change out relatively quickly. I mean, it's no big deal. It's just usually the biggest pain in the butt is if how long, you know, they've let it go, that the battery really drains. The minute you pull that battery out, it drains and doesn't save anything in the BIOS. But if you're changing it, just because it's losing a couple of minutes, you can usually just quick pop it out, put a new one in, and you won't lose any of your settings.
Cool.
Because it's in the BIOS, where
as long as you're quick enough
of all the settings.
And if you never turn your computer off, then it never uses the battery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the way it uses the battery. When the power's turned off, to remember your hard drive, to remember your monitor, to remember the date and time. So the date and time is the easiest symptom to recognize when your battery's dying.
Hmm. Steve, by the way, is the lucky one here.
Yeah, right.
With me, because I don't have Mac.
Right.
Well, you're getting a kid soon, so we'll get them a Mac.
I was intrigued by the cover story.
On Time?
In Time magazine,
Yeah, looks like it's going to be just
flat out cool.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, it'll run Yellow Dog Linux, so that's a good thing.
Do you want me to do any trial runs on one? Do you have any freebies I can just play with?
We're hoping you'd get us some, so we could test. Come on now.
We've sold all ours already. I haven't even got a chance to take it out of the box. It's out of the store.
Get one of your guys to call up Apple. Have them send it to
you. Oh, I'm sure it's going to be just that easy.
Yeah, no question.
Well, guys, congratulations. Welcome to Wham, and
we all love
the show.
Thank you. Love to hear that.
All right.
Now, I want to say for Argyle and Bon Vivre, don't call in because Jeff's leaving. So if you've got a problem with the archive, he's gone now, so don't call in. But we are back to the phones, and I want to thank everybody who's been on the line patiently holding. Our next caller is Dawn from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Dawn. What's your question?
Hi. I am having a problem with my... I have a Dell Inspiron 8000.
Mm-hmm. Nice machine.
And
yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was until it stopped working correctly. I have a docking station at my house,
mm-hmm,
which I use all the time.
Right.
And I travel a lot, so... all of a sudden, it started giving me errors when I was out of the docking station trying to get into Word. And it wouldn't even get in. It's not the normal .dot.
I repaired and did all that.
Uninstalled, reinstalled Office.
What is the error?
It only happens when it's not in the docking station. It's just a generic WinWord.exe has caused errors and is stopping.
When you're in the docking station, are you on a network?
Yep.
At work?
Yeah.
If possible...
Well, I have a home office.
Well, still, is that the only machine on the network?
No.
It's possible that it's looking for something out on the network, like, for example, if you're storing your files or your normal .dot out on the network somewhere.
The recent list, if you've ever opened a file through the network,
the recent list
will have a network file in it.
Right.
And that can cause errors.
Right. And so when you're at home and docked in, it finds everything and it's happy. And when you're on the road, it doesn't find everything and it's not happy.
Especially under the options where if you're saving your, like Nick was saying, if you've got it pointing to save your files, say on some other machine, and when you start to load up Word, it's looking to see where your previous, you know, your files are stored and you've got it referenced to another drive on another machine, it's going to cause you problems.
Even inadvertently. if
I don't
you
know. I don't do that, though. I mean, I work locally because I'm a consultant, so I have to keep everything on my own computer.
If you go into Tools Options, there's a command for Files and Folders where you set the default locations for Word, its template files, your document files, the help files, things
it's
like that.
It's all on my local drive, though.
And make sure that's all...
Make sure it's all pointing
to C, just in case.
Yeah, it may be that you didn't set it up differently, particularly if in some instances you loaded something from the network.
You also might want to clear your recent file list.
Right.
From the file menu. It tracks the files you've recently opened, so you can open them again.
Right.
You might want to clear that just to see.
If you're loading a font from the network.
Is there anything else like it? When it's out of the docking station, maybe my local network drivers are conflicting with Word. I mean, it seems strange. Like, I don't have any other. It's Word and WordPad.
What version of Windows are you using?
2000.
Which version of Word?
It's Office 2000 Premium.
So it's Windows 2000 with Office 2000?
You might want to just check the Office update page to see what patches are available for Office.
Yeah, I have done all that. It's just so strange, and Excel doesn't give me errors, and I've completely reformatted my drive and started all over again, and getting the error.
Yeah, part of the problem is that Windows 2000 was never really designed to be used on laptops. And I hate to say that because I use it on my laptop, but it was never really designed to do that. So unlike Windows 98 or XP, where if you pull it out of the docking station, it gets happy.
Yeah, it knows.
Windows 2000 doesn't as well. And one of the things it continues to do is look for the docking station and particularly the network connection. So you may, and here's the other thing, when you sign on to Windows 2000, do you sign on or does it auto-sign on?
I sign on.
When you sign on, are you signing on to your home network?
No, locally.
To the local machine itself?
Yeah, because okay. In our home office, it's just, it's not a domain, it's just a work group.
Well, even so, it may be, do you have drives mapped to other machines? Or do other people have drives mapped to you?
I have drives mapped when I'm here, and then I just tell it not to connect when I log up outside of my docking.
Okay, but see, I'm still thinking there's something on that Word is looking at on some other drive somewhere, whether it's a document in the recents list.
Check in the tools and just to verify that it's pointing everything to your C drive.
Okay.
Give it a shot.
Yeah,
let us know.
Pretty much
give us a buzz back next week and let us know how you make out.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okie doke. Thank you so much. Our next caller is Lynn from East Irondequoit. Welcome, Lynn. What's your question?
Hi there. I hope that I get an answer to this.
Oh, we always have answers.
Okay. It may not be good answers, but it might not be the right answer.
I have tried to challenge myself on this one, and I think I have the reason why what my problem is. I installed a Kodak digital camera software and print.
Yep.
Print Picture Maker.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to send the pictures from the Kodak software to my documents and mail them through Outlook without any problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it will not let me email through the Kodak software. And I had a feeling it had something to do with my Norton.
Is that the Easy Photo software you're talking about?
No, that is it's the digital DX3215, and it has the docking station.
Right, and what software are they using to...
Kodak Picture Software.
What error message did you get?
Well, that's the long and short of it. What I did is I went ahead and I uninstalled and reinstalled Norton.
Mm-hmm.
Norton what?
Norton Antivirus.
Okay.
And I have the whole package, the Internet 2001 Internet Security.
Well, all right. Now there's something out because I was leaning toward Norton Firewall. If you've told Norton Firewall not to allow the Kodak software to access the Internet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I kept thinking that. So what I did is when I reinstalled Norton completely, I reviewed the alerts that came up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where I initially messed up. And my question is, with the remote service on any one of these firewall rule assistants that I got, is it any network or is it the specific port that it draws up?
You can, well, it depends on how you set it up.
Yeah. That's my question.
You have the choice.
Yeah,
you can do it both ways. So it depends on how you set it at the time.
Okay, what I did, and I think this is where the error is, it allows me to pick either any network service or a certain port that's listed there.
Right.
For every one of these rules that have been configured.
Right.
And I went ahead and picked the port. Now, I'm wondering if it should be network service and then retry this all again.
Wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt.
It certainly couldn't hurt to try.
If you're grabbing the wrong port, where it's going to sit there and say any service.
And the codec software should use the standard SMTP port.
It should, but if it doesn't, what you can do is look in the manual. It will tell you what port it uses, and you can open up that port.
Is it 110, is it? Or is that POP?
I forget.
POP.
It's POP.
POP is 110. SMTP is probably something else.
23.
Yeah, I would go back and tell it to any service.
Okay.
Give that a try.
I will try it.
And let us know.
Thank you.
All righty, so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Craig, and me, Nick, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Here's Nick Francesco.
And the answer is, it depends on the compression ratio.
Yeah.
Our next caller on Soundbites is Jackie from Walworth. Welcome, Jackie. What's your question?
Hi, guys.
Hi there.
I'm sure you've answered this question often.
Okay, then. Next caller.
But I never heard the answer, so I've got to ask it. With regard to antivirus programs, which do you lean towards? Norton, McAfee, have you ever heard of PC Cillin?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which one is the best for a home computer today?
Yes.
Yes. Either any of those three are good. We all have personal preferences.
Inoculant is good also.
Inoculant is good too.
Okay.
You know, but our personal preferences are truly personal. For example, I lean toward McAfee's because I met John McAfee many years ago at a conference, and I became a beta tester for their software.
Same here.
So, you know, does that make the software better? No, it means that, I have a personal interest in McAfee. That's all there is to
that. But you know one thing, though, about McAfee that I like about, other than Norton, not to say that Norton's not good, it is. But when you look at the company, McAfee, that's all they do is antivirus. They don't have any other programs that they're developing,
the one thing
Ghost and all these other programs.
One thing
that's
weird
all they do
with McAfee is they're part of the Network Associates group. And Network Associates sells Virus Protector under its own name. It sells the Dr. Solomon brand. It sells the Virex brand. It sells the McAfee brand.
Right.
So Network Associates actually has four different virus protectors competing with themselves.
Right. But all of them are good as long as you're running one and updating it regularly.
And only one. That was a question we had once. Should you run more than one? No, because they fight with each other.
Yes.
Oh, right. I wouldn't do that.
Right. But any one is good. Pick the one that makes you happy, the prettiest box, the cheapest price. I don't care. But they're, as long as you run one and update it regularly. Any of the three you mentioned are good.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thanks very much.
Thanks so much. We're going next to Leonard from Niagara Falls.
Slowly I turn.
And how often do you hear that? What's your question, Leonard?
Hey. Good show, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago, I downloaded Nero's free demo.
Yep, right.
And no, it wasn't, because I had some errors on my CDs after I got done burning. So I went to uninstall it, didn't have an uninstall on it, and I had Windows uninstall it.
Mm-hmm.
But it left another drive on my hard drive.
It puts its own drivers up there.
Yep. How do I get that off? Because it created an F drive. What it did is it took my CD burner and my CD drive and gave it an E and an F. And how do I get that back down to where it belongs?
E and an F?
How interesting is that? What it sounds like is you've got two sets of drivers
loaded
for the same system. So
probably the standard Windows driver, then the Nero's driver.
What you need to do is uninstall the hardware. That should remove all the drivers.
In your device manager.
Right.
Remove those devices.
What version of Windows are you running?
It's 98, I think, first edition.
Okay, first you should do all the updates.
Before I delete it?
Yeah, do all the updates. Then you should go into, right-click on My Computer, select Properties, and click the Device Manager tab.
Okay.
You'll see a list of all the devices. Find the two CD drives and remove them.
Both of them. Okay.
Well, you can remove them all, and then that way it'll...
Right, if you have more than two, you have to remove them all.
Remove everything.
And right, then, I have the two CD. I have the regular CD driver,
Removed,
and then the burner.
Right, but whatever's listed in there as a CD, delete it.
You know what he might want to do?
Then, let me finish this first.
But wait a minute, before he gets into there, because where there will be hidden, and you won't see it, and you don't realize it.
Oh, yeah,
If you go, when you got to reboot, and you go in safe mode. If you press the F8 key, option 3 is safe mode.
Correct.
In the safe mode, then go into device manager like Nick was starting to say, and bam, all of a sudden you go in there and you click on that plus sign next to the CD, you might see 8, 9, 10 versions of that CD.
Yeah.
And you got to remove them all.
Oh,
and once
okay.
they're all gone, reboot your system.
And then will Windows find the
Windows
will find
say, oh, you have correct. New hardware.
Oh, okay.
And it should find the two you have and only the two you have.
Right.
Good. Okay. Guys, thank you.
And thank you, Leonard.
There may be something on Nero's website, too, about uninstall procedures and making sure it gets rid of all the drivers for Nero.
Because that's one thing I don't understand with Windows 98, that it does screw up like that, that, you know, you tell it to remove it in the regular mode, and then you reboot, and it's back.
Yeah, because...
It's because you got to go out and do it in the safe mode, just like running SCANDISK. And the defrag from SafeMode.
Leonard, you may be our first caller from Niagara Falls in 12 years. How are we coming through there?
No, he's from Buffalo.
He's gone. Okay.
Now we got Joe.
We're done. We have Joe from Buffalo. And, of course, Joe's one of the many people who doesn't have anything to do but listen to the radio in Buffalo, at least until they dig out his house. How are you, Joe?
Yeah, we had to send you guys some snows for your winter fest or whatever.
And we thank you very much, but we just wanted to rent it. We'd like to send it back after.
Yeah, and it was a dark color. It was supposed to be white. We ordered white.
Sorry, I didn't tell him to put the salt in. Anyhow, for this Windows 2000 person, one additional thing to check is if any shortcuts were made to anything on either network, because they have the link tracking feature that could start screwing things up.
Very good.
I think it was
Actually,
Jackie.
I wanted to know what you guys thought of the debate in the industry now about disclosing bugs, because like near the end of November, Red Hat Software was castigated by a lot of companies. Hey, you released a patch to WFTPD before everybody else was ready for it, and everybody else had to scramble to get their fixes and updates
it's
out.
It's a catch-22. A company doesn't want to announce they have a bug until they have a fix.
But
there's been a lot of cases in the news recently with independent researchers, in a nice word for them maybe, that find these bugs, and there was just one the other day about AOL, and they try to tell the software owner, here's a bug, and then, you know, in their time, you know, you should have a day or two to fix it. And then break it to the public and to the news sources, and then you've got companies like Microsoft and AOL are scrambling to try to put together a patch faster than they can.
Well, they knew about it. Well, in the latest
right. How long
process,
is
it was December 19th.
Yeah. How long is long enough to come out with a patch?
Exactly.
In the Linux world, it's overnight. Red Hat's argument in this particular case that you're talking about was that all of the hackers knew about it.
Right, that's exactly it.
The only people who didn't know were the people who needed the protection, so they got the protection out to them as soon as possible.
Right, and I think that anybody that operates any kind of site, they ought to be aware of any loopholes in software so they don't get pounded before vendors come
out. What's happening is a lot of average people are now putting up Linux boxes to play with, and they're not being system administrators and programmers.
Right.
They just want the box to run. And
you
got to
update every day.
Yeah.
It's just like the antivirus stuff. You got to keep on top of the update.
And the same thing is true of XP.
Oh,
XP's got some huge holes in it that are easily fixable, and the patches exist. But if you don't do them,
you're going to get nailed.
You're going to be owned.
Yep.
And one final tip, have you heard of Automicron for Windows time updating?
No. What's the address?
How do you spell that?
A-U-T-O... No, wait a minute. A-U-T... Oh, geez. I can't remember how it's spelled.
Automicron. A-U-T-O-M-A-C-R-O-N, more than likely.
Yeah, it's like a .org thing, and I found their time update thingamabooby really easy to use, and it will wait until you dial up before trying to make a connection.
Nice.
Of course, Apple includes this feature in the OS.
Stop it.
All right.
Okay, thanks so much, Joe. Have a great, warm afternoon. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Craig, me, Nick, and all of you at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. That's true. Here is Nick Francesco sitting right next to Dave Enright and Steve Ray and looking at Craig Shaler, who's on the buttons. And we're talking to Brian from Fairport. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show.
Sure. Thank you.
Did I hear you say Opera was another browser?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
Okay. I'm going to try that.
It's a great browser.
Yeah, you'll like it.
There's another one called OmniWeb.
There's a place called BrowserWatch.com. And they list, you'd be shocked at the number of browsers available for every operating system.
In fact, there's four for the Palm.
There's four for the Palm. And so, you're not stuck with one or two choices. There are many.
Right. Okay, because I hate IE. I use Netscape myself because it's faster and I can turn Java off. But is there anything, I'm using a program that's similar to what Napster used to be, and it keeps writing files in my Windows system. It's creating a folder called Add Cache.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes IE pop up, and it's driving me insane. Are you using
LimeWire or Nutella or Kazaa?
Kazaa, yeah.
Morpheus.
Yeah, or however it's pronounced.
Yeah.
There are two things you need to do.
Okay.
One is to run a program called AdAware. That's also listed on our website. And that will remove all of the spyware programs from your system.
Okay.
In addition, Kazaa, I don't know that Kazaa's got an updated installer. What happens is they get, when you get free software like that, somebody has to put it all together and somebody has to pay for it.
Right.
And a company called quittillyouwin.com put together the installer for those three file-sharing programs and stuck spyware in there, and that's where this ad cache is doing.
Okay, because I keep removing it and it keeps coming back.
Right. What you need to do is download the new version of the software, which, at least for LimeWire and Nutella, and I don't know about whether or not it's available for Kazaa yet, for both of those, they have a click-till-you-win free version of the installer now.
Okay.
So that's what you need to do.
So AdAware.
Yep. AdAware
removes what you have, and then you need the new version of the software.
So you don't get it back again.
Right.
Okay, cool. And the other one is LimeWire, L-I-M-E?
Yeah. L-I-M-E-W-I-R-E.
That one's fantastic. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Write that down. We'll put that on the list, too, LimeWire.com. BearShare is another one.
Yeah.
We'll put them all.
Although BearShare, though, is starting to get a little harder. More and more folks are, making themselves exclusive that, you've got a more or less.
Yeah, LimeWire is very nice.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okie doke. Thanks so much. Our next caller is Mark from Spencerport. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Enjoy your program.
Thank you so much.
All right. Got a six-month-old Dell running your favorite OS called ME. Or should I just give up already?
No, you're done.
You're two out of three of us. That's not a bad ratio, really.
Okay, all right.
If you were bad, you'd be in the Hall of Fame.
He doesn't count.
Go ahead.
Want to open Word recently, and granted, it takes a couple seconds to open, but this time it sat there with the hourglass staring at me, and after about 10 seconds, a little message popped up saying, your system is dangerously low on resources.
When was the last time you'd rebooted?
Oh, it happens every time now.
Okay.
It happens every time.
What antivirus program are you running?
Norton.
And when was the last time you updated it?
It's funny you mentioned. I do update it regularly. It's on the auto update. However, I just checked it last night.
Yeah.
And the auto update
hasn't been autoing.
It had been disabled. I've always had an auto update enabled.
And when's the last DAT file?
Well, I went and downloaded the latest file, ran it last night.
Mm-hmm.
It's Wednesday's file, and all is cool.
Yeah, a lot of the viruses, the first thing they do is disable your virus checker before it knows about them.
Isn't that something?
But I ran the latest
files last night, and it showed nothing.
The other thing you need to do is figure out what's running in the background.
I did that. There was nothing else. I ran the Control-Alt-Delete.
Right.
Nothing else. I always check.
And what's running down in the taskbar in the system tray?
I keep it clean. There's Norton running and.
How much memory do you have in your machine?
256.
And you say it's Word that's giving you the problem?
Yeah.
You might want to try doing is find the normal.dot file.
Yes, okay.
And what you want to do is rename normal.dot to normal.dot, say, OLD.
Gotcha.
And then just try starting up Word again. It will recreate the normal.dot just in case it's gotten damaged.
I see.
The virus could have attempted to change it. The other thing is, when you run your Norton, are you running it in thorough mode?
Yes, it checks all. It doesn't check just the EXEs.
Good.
Everything. It takes a couple hours to run.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah.
Well, this is taking 9 minutes. That's 2 hours.
Well, then you're not checking all files.
Okay.
There's usually an option for all files or program files.
Okay.
Check all files,
yeah.
Because it may have gotten into the DOTs.
Let me tell you what I did do quickly. I went into the Word CD and a fixed Word, quote unquote. I checked that option.
Right.
It didn't do it. So I reinstalled it over the top. That didn't do it. So
yeah, but that might not.
Yeah.
That won't replace those DOTs.
Try renaming that DOT.
But I did. I deleted Word and I reinstalled it.
But it doesn't delete everything.
Okay.
And the DOTs aren't saved there anyway.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Our next caller, Gene from Rochester. What's your question, Gene?
Good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
Pretty good. With a little bit of pain, that's all.
What's up?
Okay. I have problems opening up my webpage, so I call up Roadrunner, and they checked it out, and we checked it out over here, and it says no problem with your with Roadrunner.
Is this your webpage on your account at Roadrunner?
Well, this is my computer itself. I was trying to open up to a webpage, okay?
Yeah.
And it wouldn't open up a link. That's where I started from. And so I called Roadrunner, and Roadrunner says, let's check it. They checked it. It's not, there's not any trouble with Roadrunner. What you have a trouble with is with Microsoft.
Right,
okay.
The Internet Explorer.
He says, get a hold of Microsoft and tell them the problem. So we got a hold of them. And because I'm visually impaired, my wife did this. And
right.
We paid the $35, was on the phone for almost 2.5 hours.
Yep.
We did everything that they said. The other part is that when we was ready, we reprogrammed it with Windows 98. When that happened, hell broke loose. The screen went dead. Totally, I can't even open it up to a desktop. When I boot it up, nothing.
Are you running any special software for the visually impaired?
Yes, I'm running
Zoom
JAWS,
Pack?
And I'm opening, also OpenBook.
All right. Now, on the JAWS, what version of the JAWS are you running?
The latest. It was 3.7, I think.
I think there's a newer version.
Oh, yeah, 4.0.
I think they're up to 5 now.
Oh, I didn't get that one yet.
Yeah, you might want to double check because you went from to a new version of Windows, right?
Well, I went to it, but what happened is this is exactly what happened. When they couldn't do nothing for me, they say go back to soft. They'll tell you what to do. We did it. We unloaded everything, cleaned it up.
Yeah, but you might need to also get the updated drivers for your video card. And then also check with JAWS, and see about getting the updated version for JAWS.
And I'm afraid that kind of puts us out of time. I cannot believe the time went this fast.
But let me know how you make out, because I deal with this stuff a lot. You can get us, go to wham1180.com, click on the webpage, and keep it. I'm Dave Enright. And let
Email
me know,
Dave.
Because I work with this a lot.
And we are done for another week. I want to thank all our callers. I want to apologize to everybody we didn't get to. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Craig Shaler, who was on the phones and the buttons for us. And I'm Nick Francesco. We will see you back here next Saturday at 12:20 p.m. for Sound Bites only on 1180 WHAM.